Now, when you talk about the bigger picture, what was the Trilateral Commission? It was the leading bankers and financiers and their think tanks in Europe, the United States, and Japan. And they put forward a perspective of how to control the world. And their perspective started from the traditional standpoint of British geopolitics, which is you must always have an enemy image because you need to have wars and confrontations, little wars, proxy wars, false flags to get wars, and so on. What was their goal? It was depopulation. It was control of the world's resources, use of the international banking system, the International Monetary Fund, the Bank for International Settlements, and so on, to keep poorer nations poor, so they would be sources of cheap raw materials and cheap laborers, which later became the World Trade Organization, which argued for doing away with national economies, that is, getting rid of sovereignty, so that no nation has a control over its own credit system, banking system, or trading system. And we've been moving in that direction successively.
I'm proud to share with you Tetragen, which helps you transition to a healthier, happier, and thinner you without cravings or side effects. Our metabolic hormones are the underlying problem that doom every diet and exercise program to fail. They control our metabolism, cravings, how much we eat to feel satiated, blood sugar levels, and even our energy levels. Tetragen is formulated with four clinically proven patented ingredients that help rebalance your metabolic hormones in roughly 15 to 20 days, depending on the amount of weight you want to lose. Once your metabolic hormones are rebalanced, you'll be on the path of long-term, sustainable weight loss because Tetragen is the first in the world which is scientifically formulated with four clinically proven and patented active ingredients to help you reach your targeted weight in two distinct phases. Phase one, rebalance your metabolic hormones, and phase two, accelerate fat loss. The best part is that Tetragen comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee. So what do you have to lose besides weight? Learn more with the link below.
So now how does this lockdown, this coronavirus lockdown, which isn't warranted because this on the pandemic level, based on numbers that are coming out that are now real, we really are at level two of a level five pandemic, meaning that lockdowns and everything, all the measures they did wasn't warranted. I mean, it's real. It's a real flu. I mean, people are dying, but it's not on a level five. Like they're acting like it's a level two, but they implemented level five measures. What was the point of that? Because we're seeing mass bankruptcies. They're going to be able to blame it on this coronavirus, but it really wasn't that, was it? This was designed. Go ahead.
They're trying it. I wrote an article that I think I sent you back in January. Don't blame the coronavirus for the crash of the economy. The system was rotten and ready to go. In fact, it was crashing. The fact that the Federal Reserve was having to put in $100 billion on a 24-hour overnight basis just shows you how far gone it was. What they did is they used the excuse of the coronavirus to enact a bigger bailout than in 2008. And that's what's really going on. And so that you wouldn't know it, they say, well, we'll give you $1,200 to tide you through. If you're unemployed, we'll give you $600 extra to tide you through. If you're a small business, maybe you'll get a little break, get a little money. And then they did a big set of packages, which are basically forbearances. They would allow you to skip a payment on credit card debt or make a tiny payment. Same thing with auto loans, same thing with mortgages. Now, I'll get to that problem in a moment, but the bigger picture here is that they used the coronavirus as an excuse to bail out the bankrupt system. Instead of putting it through a bankruptcy reorganization, which they should have done in 2008, that's what LaRouche called for in 2008. LaRouche said, protect the homeowner, penalize the bankers, the swindlers. We didn't do it then, we didn't do it this time. And many people started this story, well, don't worry, Trump is in control. He's letting the Federal Reserve do this so that the Treasury will take over the Federal Reserve and then we'll get rid of the Federal Reserve and everything will be fine. Well, if you're going to do that, you don't put the Federal Reserve in control of the policy. And I'm very skeptical for people who say the reset will be done by Trump for the good of the people. That could happen still. But it's only going to happen if we fight for this, because here's what's going on. $4 trillion was made available for speculators. That's much bigger than the initial bailout package in 2008. It can be leveraged up to another $4 trillion. What are they going to do with it? Well, Larry Fink of BlackRock is in control of this, the guy who wants a regime change in finance. Who's going to get the money? Hedge funds, the shadow banking system. And what it means is when we start having massive evictions and foreclosures and the price of properties collapse, who's going to have the cash to go in and buy up those properties? Not you and me, but the big speculators. So it's a massive transfer of wealth far beyond the $4 to $8 trillion that goes into it initially.
They're basically destroying the United States, the base of the United States, and these globalist banker elites are taking it over through the coronavirus process. That's what it seems like. And that will position themselves when they do the reset to be able to do what they want.
Yeah, that's basically accurate. They're using this. They're using this to consolidate their power in real wealth terms by taking over businesses, taking over companies, taking over resources, and so on. Now, the president correctly looked at the coronavirus situation, and something that he saw, which was important, was that we had lost our supply chains. We were dependent for pharmaceutical drugs, we were dependent for steel, dependent for machine tools, for computer chips on other countries. What happens when that if that breaks down? So even as he was negotiating a trade deal with China, and we did get a phase one deal, he was looking at this question of how do you bring these businesses back? Now, there are two ways you do it. One is tax policy. You say, you come back, we'll give you tax breaks, provided you build new plant and equipment, you hire American workers, and you produce goods. That's what Kennedy's investment tax credit plan was. So far, that has not come out of the Treasury. Secondly, you have to have a credit system. A credit system which says, if you want to bring your manufacturing back, we'll make sure you get low interest credit to do it, to rebuild factories, to hire workforce, to do job training, set up the logistical infrastructure and everything else you need. Now, that would be the cause of a real V-shaped recovery if you did that. The problem is if you put it under the hands, under the control of these green crazies, these anti-growth crazy bankers who are going to use the money to keep the speculative bubble going, but will not let that get into the productive sector, even into small businesses. The small business loan provisions are hardly being used. Then you do have the kind of shift you're talking about, a radical shift to a post-industrial economy which can no longer sustain 325 million Americans.
Then what happens to, where's their next plan as far as depopulation? Is that what they're going to do?
Yeah, that's what's going to happen. And you're going to have chaos. You're going to have civil wars. This is what a lot of the racial polarization is about. You use identity politics. This is like geopolitics. You get people fighting for their family, for their tribe, for their religion, for their race, for their nation, or not even for their nation, but for their region, against all else, against everyone else. Survival of the fittest, a war of each against all. That's British philosophy. And if the collateral damage, so what? They're just uneducated deplorables, right? That's how they think about it. So if you have 1 million people killed in a genocide somewhere, so what? It's their own fault for living there. If you unleash refugees on Europe, so what? What's the cause of the refugee crisis? The wars that have been going on to destroy these nations. No one left Syria under Assad's presidency before the United States and others started funding moderate so-called rebels who armed the Al-Qaeda and ISIS terrorists. That's when the refugee crisis started. So, and who's at the center of this? People like George Soros. The connection he has to the Bank of England goes way back as a speculator. The question of China is key because China did establish a physical economic system that has many resemblances to the American system of economics, not in terms of the so-called freedoms and everything else we have in America, but in terms of producing a surplus of real products that are necessary and useful, including infrastructure, which they're now exporting, including jobs that are producing cars for the Chinese people and better housing and things of that sort, lifting 800 million people out of poverty. Now, the question was, in doing that, China took on, became wealthy. They got a lot of money from Americans through goods sold at Walmart, Chinese-produced goods that were sold everywhere, not just Walmart. Even high-end fashion comes from China. So what will happen with that money? Some of it was invested in U.S. treasuries. Some of it is in Chinese banks. Wall Street wants that money. It's several trillions of dollars. They want it. So they tried to create, as part of the trade deal, that China would transform its banking system to an American-style universal banking system. In other words, investment and speculation, high risk, making money from money, as opposed to investment in something like the Belt and Road Initiative. That's why they see the Belt and Road Initiative as such a threat, because it would take that money and use it as the seed capital to invest in new projects, in new industries, in new science and technology, which they don't want. The hardcore oligarchy is opposed to science. Now, the Chinese have said repeatedly they will not engage in derivative speculation. They started moving that way, and in 2008, they arrested bankers who were doing this. I think they may have shot a few of their bankers. I don't necessarily advocate that, but they didn't go along with it. And this is what has people like Peter Navarro and Steve Bannon so upset with China, because China won't succumb to the banking policies that are destroying the Western world.
They own their central bank, right? I mean, it's not like our 1913 coup of our whole system. They won't go to the central bank. And Steve Bannon is actually promoting and trying to get them to take on a central bank owned by these stupid idiot bankers.
And that's the real contention with China, is that they represent an alternative to a system that's collapsing. Now, is everything about their system good? No. Is everything about our system good? Of course not. But our system's collapsing. There's no way to save the trillions of dollars of speculative debt without killing a lot of people. So if we were smart, we would adopt the four laws of LaRouche, go back to Glass-Steagall, so we end the special position given to speculators. Secondly, a national bank or a treasury fund that would create productive credit to go into industry, to go into manufacturing, to go into small business. Third, major investment in infrastructure. We could create 5 million productive jobs for young people who otherwise are being recruited into Antifa and Black Lives Matter and drug gangs and other things. We could give them an opportunity to learn skills to build for the future. And then fourth, invest in, especially in research and development, in the high ends of technology, in the frontier technologies, whether it's space, whether it's nuclear fusion, plasma physics, optical biophysics for work in biomedical healthcare, and so on. That's an economic package that would enable the United States to have not just a V-shaped recovery, but a sustainable recovery, bringing millions of new people into the workforce. We could create 50 million productive jobs in the United States with that.
No, it's just doing good basic things that where you're in, like what Putin started doing, where you're starting like we did before 1913.
Yeah. This is what we used to do. This is called the American system.
Yeah, before 1913 when it started to start eroding. Now, my question is, obviously, we have to be careful of China. There are members there that want to take over the world, too. We have people who want to take over. Everybody wants to take over the world. But if we want to stop these wars and we want to work peacefully in a global trade environment, we have to work with India and China and Russia and these other countries and figure out a way to do it where we don't have this adversarial at war kind of thing all the time. And we do have to identify the facets of their systems or their people that are could turn into that. I mean, we always have to be fighting that, because I've sources saying there's some troops of China in Indian reservations. There's some things going on. We got to be aware of that and keep that from happening. But at the same time, we need to be working with these people so we don't have this adversarial thing. And that's what you guys are promoting, correct?
Well, let me take us back just for a second to two things that happened last week. Trump at West Point, addressing the cadets, the future leaders of the U.S. military. What did he say to them? We're ending the era of endless wars. We will no longer be the policemen of the world. That's why they are trying to get rid of Trump still to this day. That's why this lunatic John Bolton is being given so much publicity with his probably lying book. That's why they're using Black Lives Matter and Antifa against Trump and so on. But at the same time he did that, Putin gave an interview. And Putin reminded people in January 2017, 3 days before the inauguration, he said, they're going to invent fairy tales against Trump because they don't want him to change the system. And Putin last week said he still sees that they're doing everything they can to defeat Trump. Now, as you know, Sarah, I'm not a supporter of everything Donald Trump does. He might not be my choice for the greatest person in the world. But when it comes to courage and standing up against this corrupt permanent bureaucracy in the government, in the intelligence community, the so-called deep state, he's shown enormous courage and persistence. And if he goes back to his program that he was elected on in 2016, I think he'll win again and be able to do the things we've just been talking about. I think there are two things he has to do. One, make sure the Durham investigation is completed. And not only are there indictments against the people who have been running the coup, but an explanation of what their intention was. It's important that the American people know that this had nothing to do with Vladimir Putin or Trump's desire to build hotels in Moscow or anything of the sort. It had to do with his opposition to this Anglo-American geopolitical doctrine. And if people get that, it's important. Secondly, go back to the policy of working with Putin, working with Xi Jinping. We don't have to accept everything the Chinese do. As Trump said, look, when we agree, let's work together. When we disagree, let's talk. But if the United States joined with the Belt and Road Initiative and unleashed some of our machine tool production, Caterpillar tractor company, heavy implement dealers, there's so much that the Chinese could benefit from cooperation from the United States. And this is the way you resolve these problems, not by sending a fleet of vessels into the South China Sea or the Taiwan Straits, or build new nuclear weapons and get rid of the weapons agreements that Ronald Reagan negotiated, you know, as though Reagan was selling out to the Russians. You know, he wasn't. The agreements we made in the past were good agreements that should be continued. But the pressure on Trump is to seem as though he's not a Putin puppet. And that's why I think he's made some of these mistakes. But if you go back to what he started with as president, we can get out of this crisis, we can resolve it, and we can put the United States on a sound footing so that we could then go through a bankruptcy reorganization and we wouldn't miss the fact that all the funny money is gone. Because that doesn't affect 98% of the population.
It's all illusion. It's all illusion. And that's why I got back at my statement before, where I was saying Main Street is really separate from this, although they have it, you're tied to it. It doesn't have to be so dependent on it if we get rid of that illusionary funny money.
Well, and also, not all corporations are bad and corrupt. I mean, you look at something that was just done recently where the president used the Defense Production Act to retool certain corporations to produce things that were necessary. Now, maybe we didn't need all those ventilators, but it showed if we could do that, what could we do to alleviate some of the drought conditions by building water management systems? What could we do to protect cities like New Orleans and the North Carolina coast and the New Jersey coast from hurricanes? What can we do to improve the navigation of the American river system, which is going to hell because there's no investment? So if we invest in these things, we make the United States a smooth running machine. And when young people come up and go to school, they have a sense that there's a future for them, whether it's a future colonizing Mars or greening deserts or curing disease. But if their only idea is, I've got to get rich some way, either through celebrity, through social media, through sport, or else, you know, through connivory, crookedness, and so on, you create a generation that's hopeless.
Yes,
that's
exactly
what's been done.
Yep.
And just to add to this question, this is an area the British excel at. There was a man named Brigadier General Frank Kitson, who was deployed to Kenya in 1956, when there was a successful revolt against the British colonials going on by a group called the Mau Mau. Now, what Kitson did is he created a fake Mau Mau, a second group called the Mau Mau that burned churches, raped nuns, killed people, and discredited the original movement. And this has become, he wrote a manual on this called Gang Counter Gang, and a second one, Low Intensity Operations in Warfare. This is part of the British model that's used by institutions like Tavistock to figure out how to brainwash populations so they'll accept things that go against their own interests. And if you think about what we've been saying about getting rid of national sovereignty, they convinced whole nations to give up their control over their credit policy, their control over their investment policy, control over their court system for a phony illusion of globalization. How do you do that? It's psychological manipulation. It's the use of bribery. It's the use of media, mass media, social media, to manipulate a population. Now, the good news is, if someone's hungry, they don't have a job and a place to live, maybe they'll ask the question, how did we get into this situation? We once were a wealthy country. How did we become so poor? And if you have people like you with your programs raising these questions, getting people to think about them, then we can still win, because human beings are not cattle. They're creative beings created in the image and likeness of God, who have a capacity for love of their children and grandchildren, and therefore a commitment to the future. And if people see there's a way to get to that future without having to slaughter millions of people for the benefit of the George Soroses and the Bill Gates, then we win. Because they're weak. They're sitting on top of huge volumes of worthless paper. And if governments don't back up that paper, they're gone. They're out of it. They can go to Davos and burn the paper to keep warm, but there's nothing else they can do.
Well, that's why they're scared.
Exactly.
Right? That's why they're scared, because they realize their power is really a house of cards. It's all illusion. It's all BS right now. And they're trying to steal through the coronavirus and through other means. They're trying to steal real wealth from people.
And that's why they hate Trump. And that's why they hate Putin. And that's also why they hate the Chinese leadership. You know, the Chinese leadership are not perfect, but they did make a commitment. Whatever else they did with the coronavirus, they did make a commitment that they would save lives. And, you know, I think when you look at China lifting 800 million people out of poverty, going into Africa and building railroads and industrial zones, they're using their surplus in a way that John Kennedy meant that we would do it in South and Central America with this, the good neighbor policy that was started by Franklin Roosevelt. So America has the capacity to generate a surplus if we go back to the American system. And we are a generous people, and we should use that surplus to help others. But to do it, we have to stop the coup, and we have to break out of this neoliberal economic system and geopolitical strategic system.
Well, and you, one thing you said, too, is that they're working to dumb us down and to keep us dumb. There is a lot of advanced technology, 60,000 patents that are out there that could, we would flourish, we'd start developing, it would create this new renaissance of technology and excitement that would help humanity. And we have the most evil people controlling it, and they've actually developed a lot of most of this, but they're controlling it for their own purpose. That is a very scary thing, because they only care about themselves. So if they're sitting on a house of cards, you know, can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, just something you said struck a memory for me. There was a debate in the 1920s and 30s between H.G. Wells and Bertrand Russell over the role of science. And Wells said you should have scientific institutions, but kept away from the public, that are just for the elite to know, and then occasionally you bring in something new. Russell said, no, science is inherently revolutionary and would threaten the existing order. We must have no scientists. Now, who carried out that policy? Mao Zedong, the Cambodian communists, where they killed off the educated people. That's what the British intended to do if they could in the West. Now, in terms of the House of Cards, you know, no one knows when this thing is going to collapse, but you can't keep creating new and newer bubbles and call that progress. You know, I think a lot of people, here's what we face now. There are more than 13 million people who have used the forbearance on credit cards to not make payments. That was under the CARES Act. That ends at the end of July. There are about 13.4 million. That's people who are using credit cards to stay alive now because they don't have jobs, they don't have income. They're going to lose that. You're going to have defaults like crazy. You have close to 5 or 6 million auto loans that people are not paying right now. And that program is going to come due in the end of August. And we're going to see repossessions like crazy. There are 4.75 million mortgages, 9% of the mortgages in the United States, where people have the forbearance to skip payments. That ends, I think, in October. So we're about to have a tsunami of repossessions, evictions, and foreclosures. Now, when that happens, the big guys are going to be protected because they have Larry Fink of BlackRock handing out credit to them. And they'll be able to buy up all of those distressed properties, automobiles, and so on. But the vast number of people who are suffering are going to see this happen. And this is where you have an opportunity. Before people get desperate, if they can see there's a solution, that we can cancel some of this debt, we shouldn't bail out corporate debt of companies like Hertz. Hertz went into bankruptcy with a $20.6 billion debt. And what's the first thing they're going to do? They're going to issue a new bond offering. How the hell are they going to pay off the new bond offering? Well, brokers lined up to sell the bond offering because they could make money in the sales. Who are they going to sell it to? The chumps who are their clients. Meanwhile, Hertz is going to sell off all the cars, which will drive down the cost or the price of everyone who's trying to get rid of their car to stay alive. So this thing is going to collapse. The whole system.
The timing is such that it's right before the election.
Exactly. So what should Trump do? Now, Joe Biden, I think, has joined the Federal Witness Protection Program. You know, he's hiding out in a basement. You know, they won't send him out for rallies because he could hold a rally and not even fill up a phone booth. The idea of Biden as president is somewhat absurd because he can't complete a sentence. But Trump has an opportunity.
Yeah, he has dementia.
Yeah, yeah. And he also,
I mean, he's really sick.
He combines all the worst elements of Hillary Clinton, including the bad health.
I know. Oh my gosh.
The president has an opportunity. Go back to what people responded to in 2016. End these wars. Stop spending trillions on the military-industrial complex when we need that money for education, for infrastructure development, for healthcare. Use that money to improve the conditions of the American people, as opposed to blowing up countries that don't accept the austerity demands of the International Monetary Fund. If the president, and the president could sell it, he could do it on Twitter. He could communicate to people. Here's an example of something he could do. He called for $3 trillion in the next phase to go to infrastructure. This was a brilliant move on his part because Pelosi and Schumer were saying, okay, if we're going to have a phase four, let's do it with infrastructure. So, and they said a trillion. Trump said, yeah, let's do infrastructure, 3 trillion. And immediately Pelosi and Schumer backed away. So did Mitch McConnell. Now, what could Trump do? Trump could say, look, we're creating all this money. We're going to take 3 trillion of it and put it into infrastructure. And we're going to create 5 million jobs over the next 5 years in productive industry that will improve the country. Nancy, Chuck, Mitch, are you going to tell the young people who are unemployed today that you're going to vote against that? I mean, I think that would work. And that's what we need from the White House. And the people who are advising the president, many of them know this. They know that we're in a no-win situation on the economy. They're just hoping to get a stock market boom between now and November so he can reclaim that he's good on the economy.
They can't put all their eggs in that basket because these guys will do what they can. They've already seen it. They've already bankrupt so many with the coronavirus. They'll do whatever they can to destroy this country and Trump. And they cannot put that, the White House cannot put that into their strategy of being the only strategy. Otherwise, they will lose, just like they will lose if the censorship keeps continuing.
You know, on that point, if they actually think they can keep a stock market bubble going, look at what happened last August. The plug was pulled on the repo market, precisely because they were starting to do the plan to get rid of Trump, because what had happened right before that? The Russiagate collapsed, and it was clear Ukrainegate was going nowhere because it was another fraud. So they decided to take away Trump's claim that he was good on the economy. So if he thinks he can trust Larry Fink and these guys to build up a stock market to get him reelected, I think he should rethink that. But he should take a page from LaRouche, protect the homeowners, protect the manufacturers, and screw the speculators. You know, I think that's a winning Twitter slogan.
You know, there's one positive thing, you know, where they have suppressed technology. I think the average people, the scientists and the technologists, along with this open platform of the internet, it's flourishing regardless, because all this new tech frequency understanding, you know, with the with frequency and with the new energy and with medicine, we know more about medicine. We know how to be healthy and think all these new technologies. We're nowhere near what they're hiding, but it's still at least flourishing to a certain degree. They can't completely hold us down. Maybe that's why Mao just wanted to kill all the people. It's terrible, because they know that the smart people, the smart scientists, are like, hell with that. We're not going to let you kill us. We're not going to not go for things that are going to help humanity when I have ideas that can. And so it's still moving forward. And that's the creative nature that you've been talking about with humanity. And if they get rid of that big, you know, hand on our back, we'd be able to really flourish and keep moving and get these technologies out to the people. But I think you're right that this system is so flawed that starting with the 1913 Central Bankers Federal Reserve Act, it's just completely it's stealing money we're one big sucking funnel to City of London and to the elites and to the oligarchy, and everybody else loses. But where do people direct? Go ahead. I was going to ask you. You can respond to that. But where do people direct their energy? Who is our true enemy? First, respond to what I said, and then talk about how people should be directing their energy.
Well, the true enemy is the system that exists, that's backed up by the City of London, Wall Street, the European Union bureaucracy, and so on. NATO, the warmongers. Now, we've seen how deeply entrenched that is in the U.S. government. You know, Trump talked about draining the swamp, and then 2,000 swamp dwellers and retired Justice Department officials came out calling for getting rid of Barr because he correctly decided that the Flynn case should be dropped. That's what the deep state is, thousands of these permanent bureaucrats. Now, if the president wants to win this fight, he's got to go to the American people. And he's got to put in the Congress the fear of their constituents. Right now, they're afraid they'll lose their money from Wall Street. They're afraid they'll lose their comfortable retirement jobs. They're afraid they'll lose favorable media coverage. So that's why they, and some of them are just plain corrupt and immoral, but that's why they go along with this. That's why 98-0, the Senate voted against Trump on withdrawing troops from Syria. But what happens if you understood that on one level and was scared of it? He told the bankers when he first came in, "I'm the one standing between you and the pitchforks." And then he went in and manipulated the population to accept the corrupt bailout. Now, Trump has the pitchforks behind him. The American people can be mobilized to start terrifying the Congress into doing what's good for the country. And that means people have to know what you and I are discussing. You know, when you talk about the changes that are going on, look at the attempt to demonetize websites on YouTube, the censorship on Twitter and so on. Why are they doing that? But they're doing it because people are successfully reaching larger numbers of people. And we can be more creative in figuring out how to do that. But we've got to get beyond the ones and twos. We've got to find the ones and twos, the smartest people, and recruit them. But we've got to build a movement around these ideas of real physical economy, the American system, cooperation, not wars, and so on. And you know, that's, for me, my mission is to provide, with all the optimism that I still have, a pathway for people to discover their own creative potential so they can be brought into this mobilization and this movement, so that they can look at into the eyes of their children and grandchildren and say, "I'm doing something for your future. You may not understand it, but I'm doing it," and be proud of that. And you know, Lyndon LaRouche, one of the things that recruited me is he made this comment about, imagine sitting up in your coffin right before you're buried and asking the question, what was that all about? Was it about the sexual exploits? Was it about the goods that you possessed? Was it about how much money you made? Or was it about the lasting legacy you left to those around you and to your nation that did good for the future? That's what we have to appeal to. And that's why I think Americans are basically good. They've become greedy, selfish, because they're told that's the way to get ahead, focused on likes on social media and so on. But deep down, take the American farmer. Why do they produce? They're losing money hand over fist. They produce because they want to feed people. They feel that is a moral part of their fiber of their being. Why do scientists work sometimes under terrible conditions? Because they want to discover something for the future. And so I think, Sarah, ultimately, the work that you do, and I'm very happy to have the opportunity to share these moments of discussion, the work that you're doing is giving people hope, giving people a sense that they're not crazy, the world is screwed up, but there is a way out. And I think that's the best thing we can do. Now, we're having a conference this Saturday, the 27th of June. Maybe this program will be too late for that, but people can always find it on archive. The Schiller Institute is bringing together people from all over the world to discuss how we can realize this vision.
How do they get to be able to participate in that or watch it? Because this will go out before this Saturday, so people will be able to. This will be a good advertisement for it. Where do they learn about it? How do they get involved?
Go to theschillerinstitute.com. That's S-C-H-I-L-L-E-R institute.com. And the first thing you'll see is an RSVP for the conference on June 27th. And it's an online conference, and it'll be streamed to your computer or your cell phone or whatever. So I would encourage people to do that.
Is there a cost to it?
No.
It's free.
Absolutely free.
Excellent. Okay.
Yeah. As you know, my blog is free. I want people to read what I'm writing. So you can write to me at harleysch@gmail.com, H-A-R-L-E-Y-S-C-H@gmail.com. and ask for a link to my blog. Or I think sometimes you post the link on your site when you put up these programs. You can sign up for free. I put out an article every week, other information, link to the LaRouchePack.com website. And, you know, our obviously people can contribute, they can do things like that. But our mission is not to make money. Our mission is to take a collapsed system and reverse it and go back to what the principles that work to make our nation great.
Thank you so much, Harley. I really appreciate, I love our conversations, and I really appreciate you coming on today.
Well, I do it because I enjoy talking with you too, Sarah. And your listeners, you have a good audience.
The smartest, the most, the greatest people out there. I'm constantly told by people that come on my show, my listeners are just amazing.
Yeah.
Well, you have a wonderful week. Thank you so much.
Okay. Well, thank you. See you soon.